something we can do as long as there's no EMP. That's worldwide communications. Hi, everybody. I am Art Bell, filling in for George Norrie. Has a night off. Professor William Forstchen is my guest, and it's a pretty bleak scenario that he's been laying out. Now, I understand that some of you will have joined the program as it has gone on and probably, I don't know, are not exactly aware of what we're talking about. We're talking about an EMP, which is an electromagnetic pulse. Now, what it would do is virtually destroy all the transistors, all the long power lines, the whole shebang would go down. Computers that hold our economic data would be dead. The power grid would be completely dead. There'd be no water shortly because, of course, you need power to pump water, and on and on and on. You get the idea. It would essentially be the end of all. And yes, some percentage would survive, but it would probably be a fairly low percentage compared to the total population of the United States. Most would die. I guess we can say that safely. That's an established, I don't think you can argue with it, scenario. That's what the professor has laid out. Smaller nations like Iran and North Korea could accomplish this. Now, the American population is largely unaware of this threat. Unaware. They don't know about it. It's not like the old days when the tens of thousands of nuclear weapons on each side could destroy each country and probably in the process the entire world. But it's every bit as serious a threat and maybe more of a threat because it's held in the hands of those who don't care whether they live or die. There is also a threat from our sun. Now, I'm not sure there's as much we can do about that. Certainly, we can begin hardening if we understand the threat. But there is something we can do about the other, the man-made, the hand of man threat. That we can do something about if we understand the threat, which obviously the majority of us do not. So more of all this in a moment. We'll be right back. All right. In the interest of backtracking for those who joined late, Donald in Las Vegas, Nevada asks, we're not getting concrete answers. Well, actually, we have been. But to go on exactly, he says, how does an EMP disable the grid, my electronics? And beyond that, how can I harden my home, line the walls with copper mesh grounded to earth, or will having a whole big whole house surge protector work? Thanks, Don in Las Vegas. Professor?
Great question. I'm referring people a lot to the internet tonight. Look up Faraday cage, F-A-R-A-D-A-Y cage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are numerous sites there that can explain to you how to build a very simple, for $10, $20, you can build a Faraday cage that you can throw some of your spare electronics into that would be well protected. The problem with commercial surge protectors as we have them now is the surge, say, from a lightning bolt hitting nearby, comes at you like a wave. And the first microseconds when the surge starts to pick up, your $100 surge protector that you have hooked into your TV goes, uh-oh, and snaps it off before it can go through and blow your system. An EMP doesn't come like a wave. It comes like a wall. So it's already blown through your surge protection system before it detects it and shuts you offline. There are EMP surge protection systems, but they're rather expensive. The best answer to that gentleman is assume you're going to lose a lot, and beyond that, what's your computer, even if you had a survivable computer, what's it going to be communicating with when the grid itself is down?
Mm-hmm.
That takes us back to hardening. Hardening is building through our electrical supply system, sufficient surge protections and relays and replacement parts that even if parts of the system are blown out, they can be replaced quickly and brought back online.
All right. Professor, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that a nuclear detonation in the atmosphere would produce such a large EMP that it wouldn't matter whether you have a surge protector in front of your computer or not, because it would fry.
Oh, yes,
there'd be enough voltage to directly fry all the circuits in your computer. Certainly all the transistors would go And that would be that. Or you're a TV or whatever. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. In fact, I set in on some real experts, you know, the PhD physicist types that were debating what happens to people with pacemakers.
Funny. David in Ketchikan, Alaska is asking that. He says his wife has a pacemaker and a defibrillator. And of course, she'd be instantly dead.
Here's debate. It depends, again, upon the voltage per square meter lay down. And it's a line of sight event. Let's say, fortunately, his wife is down in the basement, away from any nearby conductive system, doing whatever, and the EMP hits. Maybe she'll be okay, but there's no promise. If she's standing looking up at the sky at the moment it happens, and she's in a direct line of sight, it could be a grim scenario.
Mm. Well, Professor, it's my understanding, though, that these would be detonated at what sort of altitude?
I've been told that the optimum altitude is classified, but it's somewhere between 200 to 300 miles directly above Kansas could do a lay down across the entire continental United States.
Yes, that was my point. So the line of sight from 200 or 300 miles up is obviously gigantic.
I wouldn't want to live in Salina. Uh-huh. People talk about Salina is just go straight up 200 odd miles or whatever, and you have a line of sight. And of course, if you're directly underneath, you're going to get a stronger surge than you would, say, up in Maine.
Yes, but it's going to cover, if it's line of sight, it's going to cover a hell of a lot of geography.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think you've laid out your scenario very accurately. It's really scary. And the question is, what can we do about it? Well, not much. Let me ask about it, one other line of questioning here, and that is Ronald Reagan, when he was our president, lobbied very, very hard to have some sort of a protective shield built for the United States so that if, detecting on launch, anything that would be launched, we would turn into dust before it gained much altitude at all. So what about that? What about some sort of great safety net?
Oh, gosh. Now you've really hit on to the political sore point of this. And I'll be blunt. It's why I talk sometimes more about solar, because one of my first concerns is hardening the system. SDI, more commonly known as Star Wars, Strategic Defense Initiative, kicked in by Reagan in the early 80s. And you can remember it was met with a lot of derision.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of mockery, and it has been all across for the last 25 years. Now, those who understand the system know that against a full-scale Soviet launch, SDI is not a guarantee. Even if only 5% of the warheads get through,
right,
we're cooked.
Right.
But, and here is the big capitalized but, the UT. Against the launch from Iran or North Korea, where it's only 1 to 3 missiles, that is an entirely different scenario. And just 2 points here. In Poland, on September 17th, we announced we were pulling out. And also talk about a political gaffe. The day we announced it, by the way, was the 70th anniversary of Poland being knifed in the back by the Soviet Union and invaded. That missile shield system in Poland could have protected the eastern United States from an Iranian launch going from east to west. One other example, when Korea did a series of launches back in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
We had a highly accurate radar system working on X-band that I was told can detect a baseball lofting out of a stadium from 2,000 miles away. We turned that radar system off because we didn't want to do something provocative while they were launching their missile. A radar system that could have given us accurate data as to the capability of the missile system. As to where their other launch splashed down, nobody's talking.
So...
yeah, it's frustrating.
All right. Obviously, there's probably some information that's classified that I guess you don't know about, but I would imagine there is some level of SDI up there now that we don't talk about. What
we have, yes, there is. We have a battery in, we have four interceptors based in Vandenberg, both Air Force Base in California. We have a battery, I believe, of 20 based in Alaska that could be effective against a Korean launch. Also, your Aegis systems mounted shipboard can be effective in the early stage, the loft stage. You have your loft, your transition, and reentry. But let me add, there is no reentry on an EMP weapon. You have to nail it in the beginning or in the middle. Not
right, launch phase. Yeah. We probably also have space-based stuff that we don't talk about, wouldn't you imagine?
I can imagine, but I've never heard anybody talk about it. I've heard a lot of people, and I'm very enthusiastic in my support of what's called Brilliant Pebbles.
Yes.
There was the Dumb Pebble system of the 80s, which was kind of an interesting idea. Essentially, you launch a trash can full of pebbles in the direction of an incoming missile, and the kinetic energy of these pebbles spreading out would destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant Pebbles is a system of small satellites with about a 6-foot-long interceptors mounted on them that are in orbit, same way we have, what, I think 14 or 18 geosync, our geopositioning satellites. But any particular spot on the Earth is covered at any given moment. Detect the launch, pop it while it's still in the loft stage, or definitely in the transition stage.
So we probably have some protection. We probably have some protection that is classified and that we're not aware of.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the case.
Maybe that's
why they're not educating the public. Perhaps that's why they're not educating the public about the danger. Otherwise, the collective silence on this issue, with the exception of what we're doing right now, is overwhelming and can't be justified, can it?
Well, let me present an absurdity. In talking with Congressman Bartlett and his staff, and they were tremendous help with getting data. And I remember early in my first conversation with Congressman Bartlett, who is our leading advocate, along with Benny Thompson, by the way, a liberal Democrat from Mississippi and a conservative Republican from Maryland, worked together on this. Congressman Bartlett said, Bill, the problem with EMP is there's no constituency. Now, sir, I maintain you are doing a great patriotic duty tonight by talking about this. You reach millions of people. If you help build a constituency of audience who start to say to their congressman, by heavens, one of you guys going to take this thing seriously, then you've done an incredible service for America. Now, let me give you an absurdity. While all of this has been going on, and since my own direct involvement in my book, One Second After coming out, you know that Congress passed a law forbidding us from owning chimpanzees?
Do that again, please. I'm sorry.
Congress passed a law forbidding us from owning chimpanzees.
Okay.
Do you see my point?
Well.
Well, one woman endured a horrific tragedy. Remember, she was on some talk show a couple weeks ago, the woman who had her face torn off by chimpanzees.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that gained such national media attention that some congressman stood up and says, by gosh, we got to pass a law against chimpanzees.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the entire nation is at risk on other issues, and it's ignored. It shows the absurdity of government at times.
Well, when I look at this, I can only imagine that they either feel there's nothing we can do about it, or that even an education of the public wouldn't allow a preemptive strike if that's what it's going to take, and it sounds like it will, short of something classified that we both don't know about, or at least I don't. Are you aware of let me rephrase this. Are you aware of any classified material that would justify the government's silence on this subject?
Let me, please, and I'm so glad you asked me that. Please let me emphasize, I have never looked at classified information. I have asked questions at times for two experts who just smile and say, Bill, let's change the subject. My anxiety comes because of attending a number of conferences on this subject in which there are people who are aware of both classified information and, of course, the declassified, who express a lot of anxiety. That reaction tends to tell me that there is a real, genuine reason for a national concern and a need for national education on this, which you are doing at this very moment.
I'm not sure what, you know, assuming that you had the cooperation of those people who listen tonight, mm-hmm. and it scared the hell out of them, what would you suggest they do?
House Bill 2195, for starters. Now, Grant, we're all preoccupied with the health bill and other issues. And a wonderful lady in my life has a wonderful quote that I know Congressman Bartlett even picked up on, which is, she was reading my book and doing some editing on it. She said, Bill, you know, what good is a bailout? What good is a health care bill if there's no country left to bail out?
Good point. Good point. House Bill 2195, you said?
H.R. 2195, co-sponsored by Benny Thompson and Representative Bartlett, you can look it up online, is a first step towards hardening our system.
Uh-huh. So it provides for the beginning of the hardening of the infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
In what manner does it do that?
It's looking particularly at the smart grid system that the administration has proposed, which ironically is even more vulnerable. And its infrastructure. It's creating more vulnerable points. Granted, it's beautiful high tech, highly vulnerable. H.R. 2195 specifically demands funding, which would increase the cost by about only 10% to ensure the smart grid is sufficiently hardened to withstand a major EMP event. Mm-hmm. That would be a huge step.
And what kind of timeline, even if you assume for a moment this passes, which in the current political atmosphere I doubt, mm-hmm. but if it did and it got signed, what kind of timeline would be involved in terms of hardening?
I've been told 3 to 5 years we could start to see a major effect.
3 to 5 years. With regard to a possible attack by any one of these rogue nations of the sort you've laid out tonight, how soon might that occur?
I am deeply, deeply concerned. In fact, when you were going over the news at the start of your program, and I could hear in the tone of your voice discussing a number of nations have told Iran, oh, please, please stop.
Yeah.
I am deeply worried for the safety of my daughter and my country on the day that Iran has loft capability, which they already have, combined with fissionable warheads, that they have 2 to 3 of them. That's the day they can take us out.
It's about as scary as it gets. Yeah. It's really about as scary as it gets. What I'd like to do, Professor, is allow the audience to begin to ask some questions. Go a little bit earlier because there are an awful lot of very, very good questions. I suppose we didn't concentrate as hard as we might have on the solar aspect of this, but it seems so difficult to marshal enough support in the case of the sun, in other words, an event from nature, as compared to the act of a nation and a possible preemptive strike. Anyway, this half hour is gone. When we get back, we're going to open the phone lines from Manila, Southeast Asia, in the Philippines. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Want to read about it? It's called One Second After. That's the professor's book, One Second After. I'm going to read an email because I want the professor to have a moment to digest it before we come back. And this was sent prior to the show, and I thought it might be relevant. And I think it is. And I'm not going to name the person who sent it for obvious reasons. Art, I look forward to listening to your show tonight about EMP dangers to the grid. I've got to let you know that I worked at San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station, SONGS. That's an acronym for it. We had Chinese Communist Army engineers working on the most sensitive aspects of Unit 1's TMI, Three Mile Island, upgrades. They worked on the SIS, Safety Injection System, that was the main safety of nukes. The sequencer drive controls a sequence, that is, and how and when the control rods are dropped into the reactor and interact with the scram breaker. The control room being converted to computer systems, which put the control room under threat by outside influences from anybody who breaks into substations and switch yards. The software was written in India, as well as much of the engineering being done offshore. I experienced all this firsthand. Power plants, switch yards, and substations talk to each other by way of the transmission lines. The large basket-like contraptions hanging off the lines at the station's deadheads are wave traps where the messages are culled off the transmission lines and deciphered at the control room so that the power plant can adjust the power factor and adjust for leading and lagging VARs, that would be volt amps reactants, for their customers. This is their Achilles heel when the enemy is designing everything in your power industry. You could actually say the enemy is in the wire. At first, I thought the reactors were at risk. But I later understood that to destroy this nation, all you had to do was destroy the substations by controlling the switchyards and shunting out power stations and keeping the overcurrent relays on to overload and burn out expensive equipment that no longer is staged at power company laydown yards or even made in this country. You can't even get nuclear power plant motors rebuilt in this country anymore. If this stuff is burned up, it cannot be replaced in a month. In 2 months without power, you're never going to be able to recognize America. There'll be a severe population reduction without power, and no one will ever know where it came from. They'll just think it was from an EMP device or a massive solar flare, and they'll never be brought to justice. SCRAM was in origin an acronym for Safety Cut Rope Axe Man. Let me say that again. Safety Cut Rope Axe Man. And that was coined by Enrico Fermi himself. Back with the professor in just a moment. I, by the way, call you professor so that as the program proceeds, professor, they don't think that they're listening to some crackpot.
Okay. I prefer Bill, the professor.
Whatever. Bill is fine, but yes, I think I'll continue with professor so they understand that fact. Now, did you hear the email? And I wonder what reaction you had.
Scared the hell out of me. Yet again, recall it was about a month or two ago, there was hacking into the power grid, which had a lot of people concerned. There's reports that one Russia went in on Georgia last year. It was preceded by a hacking into their power grid and their communications grid. It's also believed that the Russians did a training exercise of hacking into Estonia's communications and power grid. It is now a standard operating procedure for war fighting.
Okay. There have been a number of movies on the subject, and just before we go to the phones here, and they're all lit up, I wanted to ask you how realistic, War of the Worlds, for example, that was an EMP.
Hated it.
Really? I mean, the car stopped, except our hero's car, which, you know, got worked on quickly.
Change the solenoid.
Yeah.
Friends are embarrassed. Girlfriend, daughter, friends are embarrassed to go to a movie with me, because being a historian and such, I can make some very loud comments in the theater. And when his car, he said, change the solenoid, I did make a scatological comment. Bill Nye, the science guy, who's a really great guy, he actually did a little 15-minute piece for STRATCOM, the old Strategic Air Command, and it's called How Hollywood Gets EMP Wrong. And, you know, I'm glad you asked that question, because you helped me hit a nail on the head that I think I've been missing. Part of the problem with EMP is people see it in the movies all the time. It's like Ocean's 11. Oh, well, EMP Las Vegas for 30 seconds, and then the power comes back on. The one with John Travolta where he snags a couple of weapons. Oh, don't worry, I'll turn the ignition off on the car. The EMP won't bother it. Hollywood keeps getting it wrong, and people believe it.
I know. All right. I guess what we ought to do is go to the phones. I promise that, so let's do it, and let's see what kind of questions we get. From Lima, Ohio, John, you're on the air with us.
Hi, Art. Hi, Professor.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
the comforting part with the Koreans is that we know that the Koreans will get to a point where they've had enough. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a DMZ. Mm-hmm. But the Iranians seem to be a different factor. So I'm not sure how versed you are as far as Muslim theology. But my thought goes to, what if we were to destroy the well where this Mahdi is supposed to originate from? Do you think that would have an effect?
I think it would have a very violent effect if we did that as a preemptive. Mm-hmm. Though maybe conveying the well will disappear could be one aspect of it. And yeah, you're right. Shiite 12ers are one particular sect within the Muslim movement, the religion, and it's one of the most radical and one of the most dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea about creating the end times, so this hidden Amman from, I think it's the 8th century, emerges from the world and emerges back into the world, that's a terrifying thought. And yeah, you hit a good point, threaten the well. But I think the reaction would be rather violent.
Yeah. As far as vacuum tubes, would vacuum tubes help within a circuit, or would the rest of the circuit be affected?
If I was going to have anything, and I believe Mr. Bell would agree, I'd like to have an old-fashioned vacuum tube radio somewhere that I could rely on.
Okay, thank you.
That's assuming that any of the broadcasters were left to broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, perhaps a vacuum and old glow-in-the-dark radios, what we call them, might work, depending on the level of EMP, I suppose. I mean, diodes can still burn out, and other sensitive parts of a radio can go. So, I don't know. You've laid out such a scary scenario, Professor, that unless we have classified stuff that I'm unaware of, and you obviously are unaware of as well, the only protection is education and then action, and there's not going to be any action and certainly no preemptive action until there's education, right?
You got it exactly. That's why I'm awed that you're devoting your program to this tonight. If but 1% of the audience reacts, conveys to Congress how they feel about this, that starts building a constituency, so that rather than passing idiot bills about banning chimpanzees, we start talking about how do we realistically deal with EMP as a military threat? How do we build a defense policy to respond to that? How do we prepare our infrastructure, and how do we prepare personally within our communities?
Okay. David, in Mesa, Arizona, you're on the air with Art Bell and Professor Forstchen. Hi.
Good morning, Art Bell and Professor. I'm a long, long-time listener. I first listened to you when you and Richard C. Hoagland discuss the weather control in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
if you remember that.
Well, we discussed HAARP. Now, whether HAARP actually accomplishes weather control is another question, but
right.
Proceed.
Now, the next thing is why does everybody keep talking so negative when the fact remains that only once did you ever hear we have the cobalt bomb, which is supposedly 1,000 times more destructive than the hydrogen bomb when President Truman was in office, and they never exploded one because they were afraid that it might destroy the Earth. And anybody that thinks that what you were talking about, both of you, all night long today, that if Korea or any other country, including Iran, were to launch a nuclear bomb towards the United States, and we thought it might destroy 90% of the population, that we would not retaliate with a cobalt bomb.
Well, again, I'm sure we would retaliate with everything that would be needed to destroy utterly the nation that did this to us, but at that point, it would be somewhat academic since an EMP series of weapons above the U.S. would end the United States, Professor?
Yeah, well, I dedicated my book to two people. I dedicated to my father, who taught me about my country and patriotism. I dedicated to my daughter, that she grows up in a world that's safe. Retaliation after the event, in which a world in which my daughter is going to die, is not very comforting. I want to make sure it doesn't happen in the first place. And part of that is the gentleman conveyed a very firm foreign policy statement. Don't even think about crossing the line.
Well, I'm not sure it's such an instruction to somebody who wishes to die, you know, and begin partaking of their 72 virgins is going to mean very much, whether it comes from the United Nations or directly from the U.S. government as a here's what we'll do kind of deal. I mean, that's just not going to do much. The only thing that will affect one of these nations will be to end the threat. And by that, I mean end it in a military fashion.
You know, one of the great ironies from some of, shall we say, the lost history of the beginnings of World War II is that when Hitler first started doing his moves, 36, 37, 38, a fair part of his general staff were saying, please, please, go ahead and do it, because the English and the French and the Americans are going to get ticked off and take this idiot out before he drags us into a real war. Mm-hmm. And then they were incredulous every time we backed off. So, yeah, don't we all wish we could go back to 1937 and say, look, we're going to show you newsreel footage here, a place called Auschwitz, Normandy.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
let's make sure this doesn't happen again. And if that means helping these guys along to their virgins before they attack us, I'm all for it.
Yucaipa, California brings John. You're on the air, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Professor. I'm sorry. I'm going deaf, so I'm having trouble with certain things. But anyway, everything I've heard you say has been so exactly correct, because I've been studying what you're doing for 10 years or more. I can't even believe it. And my question is, because do you have a solution to any of this?
Well, okay. Actually, it's a good question. It's
a great question.
You know, like I asked earlier, other than what I've suggested with a preemptive strike, if we just stick to talking about the man-made threat,
mm-hmm.
What is the solution?
Okay, I'm going to run from the top down. Preemptive action. And I think we're all in agreement on that. That if we are looking at a situation with Iran where they're going to push ahead with nuclear weapons, we make sure they never get them. And if that means taking out the administration there, then do it. Two, ballistic missile defense. That if something is launched, we take it down before it hits us, and then we retaliate fully. Third, hardening. Fourth and fifth are two things we haven't quite talked about, is within your own community. You go and you talk to your local first responders, your emergency personnel, and you'll be gape-mouthed at how they have received no training on this type of scenario. And yet more and more of them are becoming aware because of programs like Us Tonight, and they want to start planning and training on how to handle an emergency situation. And then finally, with your own family. We as individuals. Now, sir, I think you and I are basically the same age group. Do you remember when we were kids and at school they would train us regarding nuclear war and they would hand out a pamphlet each year to take home to your family?
Yes, I remember getting under the desk.
Yeah, duck and cover. But beyond that, do you remember the pamphlets they used to give to us as kids to take home to our parents what you and your family should do in the event of nuclear war?
I do, yes.
We should be... Why are we not doing that? Well, in fact, there are websites that are doing that.
Well...
Education, as you keep pointing at. We need to educate.
I'm kind of a connoisseur of talk radio, Professor, and I listen to a lot of programs, and I've not heard anybody do a program the likes of which we're doing at the moment.
How many people are you reaching, do you think, this moment?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Millions? How many million? I don't know. It's what, Friday night, Saturday morning? Mm-hmm. A lot of people. Millions.
That's pretty powerful. You're right. Talk radio. If 1% of the listening audience called up their local talk radio stations on Monday and said, you know, I want to talk about this issue, think of the cascading effect.
It's possible. It's possible. But... I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. You know, it's kind of a technical subject, and I'm not sure how it's sinking in. I suppose as we continue to take calls, we might find out. Alberta, Canada, Gene, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there. I was wondering how one would go about with a preemptive strike. It would probably have to involve neutron weapons or something pretty heavy because of these underground facilities. And then, even if it was successful, the political fallout and such would be pretty ugly, wouldn't it? Be best just to tell Russia that, you know, if Iran or Korea, you know, does the unthinkable, that pretty much the whole alliance has to go, because pretty much your sovereignty is going to be destroyed after an EMP strike, because you have no economy, and it's just a matter of time before you're totally vulnerable. You can't run your fleets. You're pretty much doomed, eh?
Yeah, the gentleman who sent the email in before we started taking the calls, gosh, I wish that guy would call in. He's truly an expert on the system and how vulnerable it is. And, yeah, you're right. The political fallout will be a blizzard compared to one or two snowflakes falling over Iraq.
But that's, you know, that's the reason for that is because people don't
understand.
Have not been educated to the threat. They don't know about the threat. You know, most people think, well, North Korea with some nukes, Iran with some nukes, bad. But, you know, we just, yeah, we might lose a city or a few cities, and then we'd retaliate, and their nation wouldn't exist any longer. They're not considering what you have proposed, that all they have to do is vertically launch something to the right altitude, detonate it, and the United States, as we know it, ceases to exist. And then what?
I remember, I believe it was April 4th, April 5th, when North Korea did its first loft this year of a missile. And I was absolutely stunned when a senior member of the administration, some advisor, pointed out, says, oh, not to worry about it because they can't get the warhead because they need a reentry shield on the warhead so it can penetrate through and take out Seattle. So don't worry about it. And everybody who is within, shall we say, the EMP community was like, oh, my God, nobody's getting it.
Well, nobody is getting it. All right, Professor, hold tight. We have yet destroyed another segment. Very quickly, we have one more hour to go, and we'll devote that to the telephones. My guest is Professor William Forschin. We're talking about electromagnetic pulse and the end of America as we know it. From Manila, I'm Art Bell.